Tēnā koe, Mr. Speaker, and it's a pleasure to kick off the valedictory season in this Parliament. I am what you might call an accidental MP, someone who ended up in this House by accident, not by design. I casually agreed to put my name on a Green Party list for the 99 election at a time when the Green Party was polling at 0%. The next thing I knew, Jeanette Fitzsimons was on the phone to me, telling me that I'd just become an MP. So the first few weeks passed in something of a blur, but even so, I did feel that I was participating in a moment of history, being part of the first group of Green MPs to be elected into Parliament. Jeanette and the late Rod MacDonald were wonderful mentors to their new and very Green MPs. And we had then and still have today a very supportive and egalitarian culture, which I suspect is rare in the political world. I recall a meeting shortly after we were elected with Telecom, and I felt they were trying to lead us up the garden path. So I gave Rod a gentle kick under the table, and I thought afterwards, imagine a newly elected backbencher kicking Helen Clark or John Key under the table. But that was the sort of relationship we had and still have in the Green Party. I did take a while to get the hang of Parliament. I remember nonchalantly deciding one day to vote to change the title of the Apprenticeships Bill to the Modern Apprenticeships Bill. No sooner had I uttered the words, seven votes in favour, than out of the corner of my eye, I saw Trevor Mallard roaring up the house towards me and yelling at me, get outside! I airily refused and wondered what on earth all the fuss was about. And it turned out that thousands of copies with the old title had already been printed and now, thanks to my change of vote, would have to be thrown out. Another amusing memory was when I persuaded Nandor at the very last moment to vote against the microchipping of dogs bill. All hell broke loose because his was the casting vote that defeated the bill, and no one had warned the government about his sudden change of heart. An outraged Prime Minister was on the phone, and even the normally serene Jeanette Fitzsimons was apoplectic. But we could hardly conceal our delight that we had spared hundreds of thousands of dogs from being needlessly microchipped. Shortly after we arrived in Parliament, the Green Party negotiated a moratorium on genetic engineering and a Royal Commission of Inquiry. Jeanette and I spoke at literally hundreds of meetings around the country and helped organise mass protests and marches. But despite huge public support for the moratorium, the government lifted it in 2003, and I recall the furious reaction when the Green MPs walked out of Parliament in protest. But nevertheless, I'm proud of the fact that we helped ensure there are no genetically modified crops growing in New Zealand, so far at least. One of my first acts as an MP was to accept an 80,000 signature petition from SAFE calling for sow stalls to be banned. And I climbed into a sow stall to demonstrate how cruel it was and was ridiculed for doing so, I might add. So it's gratifying that a decade later, the government has finally agreed to get rid of sow crates. Another early highlight was our successful campaign to save the Overlander. I took the Overlander on what was to have been one of its last journeys and arranged to collect our Save the Overlander petitions along the way. Everywhere the train stopped, there were huge crowds of people clutching petitions. At Otrahonga, people brought their petitions in a century-old wheelbarrow. And at Te Awa Mutu, no sooner had the guard explained over the intercom that we were going through the King Country, which was home to two famous New Zealanders, Jim Bolger and Colin Meads, than there was Colin Meads standing at the station supporting our petition, and the train went wild. I said in my maiden speech I wanted to represent people who were fighting for safe food, animal welfare, public transport, natural health and other green issues. And that's what I have done. I may not have represented a geographic constituency, but I've certainly represented an issue-based constituency, and the thousands of people who contact me about food and other issues is testament to that. Some people tell me they see me as their voice in Parliament, and I feel humbled to have fulfilled that role. I've also been a voice for animals in this House, and I'm proud to have put food and animal welfare on the political agenda. When I first raised animal welfare issues, MPs cracked jokes and rolled their eyes as if to say, how can you expect us to take such a trivial issue seriously? So it's fantastic that it's no longer a laughing matter. But even so, hundreds of thousands of factory-farmed animals spend their entire lives locked inside cages in conditions of almost unimaginable cruelty. And the Animal Welfare Act still protects the interests of animal owners, not the interests of animals. So it was disappointing that my private member's bill, which would have amended the Act, was defeated in Parliament. When the Green Party came into Parliament, our ideas seemed radical, even loopy, and we were swimming against the tide. But now, many of our ideas are widely accepted, and we're swimming with the current. We've even managed to break down the stereotype of Morris dancing, mung beans and sandals, that stereotype, and we've shown that we can bring about change as an independent party even when we're not part of any formal coalition. And even when we haven't succeeded in getting legislation changed, we've helped change attitudes. My 36,000 signature petition calling for mandatory country of origin labelling of food was rejected in Parliament, but it's helped raise awareness of where our food comes from and force supermarkets to introduce voluntary country of origin labelling. Perhaps my greatest frustration as an MP is the fact that this Parliament has no jurisdiction over most aspects of our food. We've handed over control of this vital issue to an Australian-based organisation, Food Standards Australia New Zealand, where we have one vote out of 10. Now, I'm all for closer relations with Australia, but surely cuddling up to Australia need not involve handing over great chunks of our sovereignty to an Australian-dominated organisation or becoming the seventh state. But despite such frustrations, I've hugely enjoyed my time here, working with MPs from all sides of this House, particularly in select committees. I enjoyed chairing the Health Select Committee. It was extremely satisfying to have my flexible working hours bill become law, satisfying to have worked with the Labor government to secure funding for six successful projects, an organics advisory service, a $12 million nutrition fund, working on the healthy food guidelines for schools, even though these have since been thrown out for no good reason. And so as a nation, we're doing nothing to improve our eating habits, which are fueling epidemics of obesity, type 2 diabetes and dietary-related diseases. Other highlights include working with the government on the Natural Health Products Bill, initiating inquiries into ambulance services, natural health, obesity, type 2 diabetes, the future of bees, and even helping save Wellington's trolley buses and the Johnsonville line. But I'd like to devote the rest of my speech not to my own achievements, but to some observations about democracy. Now, we tend to be somewhat complacent about democracy, but parliamentary democracy, like everything else, needs constant renewal, or it will become stale and tired and less relevant. And there are some days in Parliament when I think it has become all of those things. In particular, I despair about the polarised and confrontational way we so often do business in this House. Much of the time, it's trench warfare in here. MPs gather for question time as if for a military confrontation. The aim is to do battle, to defeat the enemy on the other side, not to debate or listen. The heavy hitters, the point scorers, the alpha males lead the charge and hurl abuse at the other side. And so question time, which ought to be the showcase of our democracy, routinely degenerates into a pointless scoring match. And the rest of us have become so used to this belligerent behaviour that we end up thinking it's normal and acceptable. But outside of Parliament, many people find this behaviour childish and off-putting. A group of 14-year-olds observed question time in 2002 and wrote a report about it. MPs mocked each other, shouted at each other, interrupted each other, and seemed to have no respect for each other or for different opinions, they wrote. There was no sense of working together toward anything. They called on MPs to stop the bullying behaviour and develop a more cooperative culture instead. Naively, I suggested we set up a cross-party working group to look at their report and ways of improving our working culture. But this went down like a lead balloon, and nothing much has changed since then. So, unfortunately, there's seldom constructive dialogue or really thoughtful debate in this House, and much of the time no one is really even listening to our debates. On the other hand, away from the cameras and select committee, a lot of tremendous cross-party work takes place in a mostly constructive and positive working environment. Mr. Speaker, 106 bills have passed one or more stages under urgency in this Parliament, most of them not urgent at all. And there's urgency, of course, tomorrow. I think the excessive use of urgency, bypassing of select committees and public submissions, undermines our democracy and fuels a growing distrust and disillusionment with politics, which is eroding people's confidence not just in politicians, but in our entire political system. Not long ago, under First Past the Post, Parliament often operated as an elected dictatorship, with the executive completely controlling this House and ramming their agenda through Parliament. Thanks to MMP, this is no longer the case. When governments are forced to negotiate with smaller parties, they can't completely control this House or select committees, which now have some measure of power and influence. But even so, the executive still controls a great deal of what Parliament does, and I believe the House needs more independence so it can counterbalance the power of the executive and better hold governments to account. Mr. Speaker, you have tried to make ministers answer questions and to make the government more accountable, and I congratulate you for that. But I'd still like to see more independence for the Speaker in a rule such as exists in the UK, that the Speaker is elected by a free vote of Parliament and severs all party affiliations. Mr. Speaker, MMP has made Parliament far more representative. It's breathed new life into our democracy, brought in new parties, new ideas, new ways of working. But more changes are still needed, I believe, if we're to make Parliament more modern and more capable of responding to the challenges that confront us. We live in a time of rapid change, yet our Parliament is a 19th century institution, hidebound by rules and conventions, and it still operates quite a lot of the time like an old boys' club. So I believe a major overhaul is needed to the way Parliament works to make it less remote, more relevant and accessible to ordinary New Zealanders. And I believe we owe it to New Zealanders to lift our game, leave behind the tribal warfare and the adversarial way we so often do politics, and adopt a more constructive approach. Mr. Speaker, we live in a time of financial and ecological crisis. The glaciers are melting, bees are disappearing, the oceans are acidifying. Everywhere there are signs of ecological collapse. Our global financial system is teetering on the verge of collapse too, and our society is growing more unequal by the year. Yet in Parliament, far more energy is spent on trying to win the daily media battle than grapple with the crises that confront us. And the media too often seem more interested in scandals and the trivia of politics than in serious policy issues or debate. All the focus is on the battle between warring parties. Who's winning? Who's losing? Who's up? Who's down? Rather than on how are we going to steer ourselves out of the mess that we've created. The problem is that for a healthy democracy, we need an informed electorate. But if there's less and less serious content in the media, people won't be sufficiently informed to make an informed choice at the ballot box. Mr. Speaker, a diverse and independent media is critical for a healthy democracy. Worryingly, we're one of the only countries in the world without mainstream public service television, and even our outstanding public service radio is limping along on the back foot with its funding frozen indefinitely, forced to sell off its grand pianos to survive. Four overseas-owned companies control most of our media, and we have one of the most deregulated media environments in the world, with no rules around foreign ownership, cross-media ownership, or anything else. So there's actually nothing to stop Rupert Murdoch or anyone else from taking over any or all media in New Zealand or setting up a Fox-type television channel which would push a particular political barrel and not even pretend to be impartial. And I believe we need to review our media ownership rules and set up a strong and more independent media monitor. The growing influence of corporate lobbyists also concerns me. Lobbyists operate in secret, so it's almost impossible to work out who is lobbying whom in this place and on whose behalf. In other countries, the activities of lobbyists are publicly disclosed on a register of lobbyists, and I've been seeking to bring transparency to lobbying here through a private member's bill. Corporate donors and lobbyists have far greater access to government than ordinary New Zealanders, and some, I believe, are able to exert undue influence on policy and legislation as a result. The problem is that they pursue the vested interests of the corporations they represent, not the public interest, and so the growth of lobbying is shifting the political landscape in favour of corporate interests at the expense of the public interest. Finally, Mr. Speaker, I want to salute the unseen workers of Parliament, the friendly security guards, the cleaners, the cooks, the Hansard staff, all the courteous and patient people who keep this institution going. And special thanks to the magnificent librarians who have provided me with so much invaluable information over many years. Thanks to all of the people from various organisations I've worked closely with over the years, some of whom are here today, Safe GE-Free New Zealand, Soil and Health, the Safe Food Campaign, the Nurses Organisation, Service and Food Workers, Charter of Health Practitioners, Alcohol Action, GRAPER, many others. I could go on and on. I would have achieved little without your collaboration and support. Thanks to all my fantastic colleagues and friends in the Green Party caucus. It's been fantastic being with you all for the last 12 years, and to the wonderful and talented Green Party staff, in particular to what I call my secret weapon, Dr. Muriel Watts, and the wonderful Kevin List. Thanks to all my hard-working and supportive executive secretaries, from Dr. Sean Weaver, Dr. Charlie Chambers, Councillor Iona Pannett, through to Angela McLeod. Thanks to the students who've worked with me as interns over the past decade, to my family, my mother, my late father, sister and brother, my stepchildren, my extended family, and my wonderful family of friends, many of whom are here tonight. My greatest support has come from my family, especially my incredibly supportive and politically astute husband, Dennis Foot, and my awesome son, Zachary Kedgley Foot, who has had to put up with a mother who's been a politician since a young age. It's been an enormous privilege being a Green MP, and now it's time to hand the baton to another generation. And it is incredibly comforting to know that Keith and I, as the last of the original Green MPs, leave the party in such good heart, and that another group of talented and energetic New Zealanders are waiting in the wings for their turn in Parliament. Thank you very much.